David Abramson, psychologist in private practice. Yeah, in fact, I think we need to bring him in like 3 times a week, because David, it hasn't been an easy week. Our listeners have been quite critical of us.
Mm. In what respect?
I don't know. I just, Zanati.
Just everything. Everything, David.
Yeah.
But your music has been
superb, but they haven't all loved it.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah, yesterday was hectic Tuesday. Even though it's been brilliant. Anyway, but it doesn't matter. We soldier on, don't we? We soldier on. All right. So, David, we want to talk about coronavirus in terms of anxiety. Mm. I did have one or two complaints about people saying that, that I've caused tremendous anxiety in their children just because I said if coronavirus comes to South Africa, we're all going to die.
Yes. Several times, by the way. Several times.
You don't need to have one, David. Oh,
good morning.
Yes. I can emphasize a point, but I've been known to emphasize a point. So yes. So is it anxiety provoking?
I think it is very anxiety provoking when we hear about a pandemic, an epidemic, and we hear it spreading from country to country. And we see these graphics of people walking around with masks on. It is very scary. It feels like the world is being attacked. And I think, it's very, very difficult to keep it in perspective. Because when you actually look at the numbers, and we often do that in psychology to try understand the actual facts, to put things in perspective through the facts, one sees that actually it's not as serious, and I know what I'm saying, I'm really aware of what I'm saying, not as serious as one would imagine. I mean, if you look at the statistics, in contrast to the coronavirus, 10,000 people in the US have died already from seasonal flu, and 60 of those have been children. 10,000. Now, I think for me, if people have had heard that 10,000 people had died of the coronavirus, I think there would be
mass hysteria.
Mm. So actually, I think people have lost perspective, but it is very scary because of that. And certainly, certain countries obviously are taking precautions and rightly so. But really, the chances of one contracting coronavirus and then even dying from coronavirus are unbelievably small.
So why are people actually saying that? Why are they saying we're all going to die from corona? Oh, it's me.
Because yes, we're scared of new things. That's another thing.
Think
it's
that's
still
what it
too
is.
New. I mean, the flu is just like a thing that we're used to, well, where you've survived it. You've actually said something like this in your book.
I wrote it in my book, yeah.
Yes, yeah, where you know that you're going to be fine, so you don't panic.
Oh, that but book's out of date. We're going to have to rewrite that chapter.
Yep.
Smile,
yep.
Damn it. But yeah, no, that's it, because you're used to overcoming it. It's like,
exactly. We get sick and we get better. We know that. It's kind of reinforced over and over again.
We know it, and that's exactly it. When we know something and things are predictable and maybe consistent, then we feel a lot less anxious about it. So when someone has, pneumonia is a very, probably, and I'm not a doctor, but probably as serious or even more serious than coronavirus. Mm. But because we hear about it so much, that is serious, but the person went to hospital and recovered. We feel much more at ease. But when we hear about
because it's a known.
But when we hear about a very scary unknown virus that's coming from a city in China and that's spreading
from an animal market, I think that made it more scary.
Yes,
I don't know why that made it more scary, but it did.
It does, and I think it's so important that as broadcasters and as reporters and people who have contact with the public, keep things in perspective. So certainly, we don't want to play it down completely and say, issue, but certainly keep it in perspective. And literally the chances are someone getting coronavirus in South Africa, if we're going to talk about this.
Well, we don't have any cases yet.
Yes, Howard.
Let's be clear. What?
No, I'm just going to point that out because my...
No, I'm very clear on that. I've said we've got handheld thermometers.
A few times this week I've had to say to my kids, he's only joking. Uncle Howard's only joking.
Why this uncle business? Can we just drop this uncle business? It makes me sound creepy.
Do you want
doesn't
me to say
it makes it sound like grandfather. Joshua Dawes.
Ansan says, Howard, but that's love. We pick you out because we care about you. Thank you. Well, that is true.
It's tough love, Howard.
It is tough love. So I have such a strong memory of when I was younger, and there was the whole, I don't know, obviously I was a young kid who was a bit weird, but I liked news. And, yes. And I remember hearing or reading or following the story of Skylab. Mm. And I don't know if you remember Skylab. It was a, well, that's a funny thing. To me, it was such an important part of my childhood, my young childhood. I'll look up the year that it happened just to see what age I was. But the, and if someone can help me out, what year did Skylab happen? 34519 or 0618951019. It was a satellite. That was, I think, an American satellite. Mm. I can't recall. But the problem was that they realized it was going to fall back to Earth. And they didn't quite know where it was going to fall. And they realized, then they worked out that it was going to fall somewhere in the Southern Hemisphere. I was absolutely convinced, and I remember looking up at the sky as this kid trying to see if it was going to fall on me.
Yes.
And I mean, the absurdity of that is incredible. In the whole Southern Hemisphere, that I was convinced that Skylab was going to take me out.
And it would be interesting to know your age, because children often, under six, even from 10 and younger, find it very difficult to understand proximity. You know, if something's happening, or probability, something's happening, elsewhere in the world, that, you know, the chances of it happening, you know, to you, so many thousands of kilometers away, so small. So exactly.
All right. So it fell back to Earth. Mm. I'm just looking it up here. It fell back to Earth in 1979. I was 9 years old.
And it didn't hit the Feldman residence.
No, it didn't hit me at all. But, I was eight. Yeah. Eight years old.
So there we go. The point is that it's, and that is so powerful, Howard, because we often forget as children that, logic doesn't often make children feel better. It's so,
there's a change, actually. I'm just thinking, like, I think if Skylab felt it, I'd be convinced
Depends how anxious you are. And
If coronavirus is coming, I'm already feeling those flu-like symptoms.
Well, it's again, and I think that's the important point, is that when you are talking to a child, the most important thing is to, step one, is to be aware as a parent, as an adult, on how you're responding to it. And if you're going to be answering questions to a child about coronavirus or any topic which causes anxiety, one has to be very careful that one's own anxiety is under control, because you could be saying absolutely fantastic things, but the child is going to be picking up your
anxiety. And that's most definitely got to be a factor. Beulah says, I was also convinced it was going to fall on me. I still think about it. That's so funny. Mm. Beulah, you had nothing to worry about because it was going to fall on me. I wish I could have told you back then. Yeah.
And that's the point, is that it's so important. As I say, I've definitely spoken about this before, how I had children in my practice in South Africa worrying about being shot in movies, because a couple of years ago, in America there was one incident, where a horrific incident, where a man walked in and shot people in a movie. But again, that confusion, or that difficulty to understand proximity and probability, is so real for kids, often when they're under 10. And that's why it's so important to give them, in a very childlike way, an idea of probability and proximity. Mm. And the way we do that is often we say to them,
probability and proximity.
And proximity.
I love that, yeah.
I also like that. Mm.
So certainly is probability, a very, very powerful way of saying to a child, what are the chances it's going to happen? Is to say things like, if someone is a soccer fan, I get a lot of boys who love soccer. So you would say, could Messi come to South Africa? Yeah, no, he could. Could Messi come to Glen Hazel or Boxburg? Mm. Depends where you live.
Brakpan.
And
we actually focused on Edenvale today.
Okay. So we'll use Edenvale. Mm-hmm. Can he come to Edenvale? Can he come to your house? And the child often says no. We say, no, it is possible. It is absolutely possible. But what are the chances? When you get home, do you think Messi will be there? And that is the chance. It makes it.
It's such a brilliant way of doing it.
It makes it very, very real. Mm. And, we might have some sticklers out there, some actuaries or statisticians who would say, but the probability is a little bit out. But it's not about that. It's about really showing them that things can happen. And that's really the trump card that worry plays. It's their joker. Something can happen. It could happen. but it's important to point out the probability. And then proximity is really about actually taking physically a map, a globe, going onto the internet and looking and showing a child how far away this is from us. So in a very, very factual, but also in a very visual way to help them to understand, the proximity issue.
My wife says that I think David's trying to tell you in the nicest possible way to please stop saying we're all going to die.
Please, Howard. Please, Howard.
Okay, well, thank you for translating you that, because I had no idea.
I'll stop calling
you. But then you'll be
uncle.
Out of business.
No. Unfortunately, it's very hard to be an adult and a child out there without the coronavirus and without broadcasters saying that our call center is empty.
I think also in the hysteria, the one thing that we're also not talking about is how many people have actually survived.
I think that's also a very good point, is we don't focus on that. We do focus on the, I think we actually just focus on the chaos of it, of the isolation of the people in hazmat suits. I think that is what gets,
well, this is a very,
what gets, it's quite graphic
it
in
is,
a way.
And this is a very good example, and we say this often, I know, together in this hour, is that we have too much information, and we just get shots of, as you say, hazmat suits, of hospitals being built, of streets being isolated, and it is so graphic, and it is really what's happening on the ground, but in such a small area of the world. But it feels so intrusive and it feels so real for us because we are seeing these images over and over and over again.
I just unsigned to send this. Received this text. I found out that the coronavirus is the best thing that has happened to me lately. My wife doesn't want to fly or take a vacation because she's afraid to get infected. She doesn't go to the mall because she's afraid to get infected. She doesn't shop on the internet because she knows everything comes from China. This is not a virus. This is a saving plan.
Oh,
that's lovely. Oh, that is, but it is interesting because Ian, thanks for your message. He says, a question for David. We spoke about social anxiety. My experience is, everyone is dealing with this coronavirus differently in the workplace, schools, etc., and social events, with some brushing it off as though it's nothing to worry about. Others are genuinely fearing the worst. How do we manage and respect to different feelings? An example of an extreme case is where someone was planning to come to a family function, let's say from Italy, and the hosts in South Africa politely suggested that it might not be a good idea because the other guests may be afraid to be there. Sad, but true story. Oh, so this is a true story. Wow.
No, absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, when you hear that there are 500 cases in Italy, it is scary. But, again, to keep it in perspective, Italy, how many people live in Italy? And the chances of this person having the coronavirus is ridiculously low. So I think for me, again.
Look, and again, just to put a little bit of perspective, Zanetti and I spoke about it yesterday. We don't mind the Italian strain as much as the Chinese strain.
Is it different?
No, but if we get corona, virus, we are definitely saying it's the Italian one.
Okay, well, there we go. So
but stylish.
Stylish. Mm. Maybe need some wine instead of antibiotics.
The linguine strain.
I think the Vienna strain sounds
yes,
wonderful.
Exactly.
But I think again, people are, it does stir up a lot of anxiety for people. And even adults find it so difficult to keep perspective on the situation. And, as I say, if this person, was coming from Italy and said they had pneumonia, I don't think there'd be as much hysteria, but from what I understand from a medical point of view, pneumonia is just as scary or just as medically dangerous as coronavirus is. So again, it's really about keeping things in perspective, but we are all very anxious about it because we are bombarded, as I say, by all these terrible images. And when we don't know it, as Anati said, and when we don't know about something, it's unfamiliar. We haven't heard about it before. Pneumonia, we've heard. Oh, we know so many people have had pneumonia, gone into hospital, and the huge majority have recovered and been absolutely fine. We don't know. We haven't heard about this coronavirus thing.
Time is 8:27. I'd love your thoughts on 34519. or 061-895-1019. Tell me honestly, how anxious are you? Would you, for example, still play Italian music? It is 8 to 27. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Anton says he thinks that the Tuscany strain of coronavirus sounds pretty good. Hey? The Tuscany strain.
It does. It really does.
Yeah, so if we get it, it's the Tuscany strain, obviously. Ronnie says, I love that song. Melinda says, was supposed to go to China City to buy presents. Thought it might freak my kids out under 10 to see everyone in hospital masks. I went to Eastgate instead. As we walked in, a whole family in masks walked past us. But I think it wasn't only one I'm not sure if it was only one family. Hectic anxiety, thinking of walking in to China City or eating food at a Chinese restaurant. And I think we're hearing a lot of that sort of thing.
It does. It creates a lot of anxiety because of when we see other people anxious, anxiety is very infectious.
Yes.
You know, when we see other people taking precautions, or we hear that at Dis-Chem all the masks are being sold out, you know, we don't think to ourselves, hang on a second, you know, like, is this rational? Is this something we should really be doing, or we shouldn't? There's a part of us that gets very, very anxious and thinks, okay, well, if other people are clearly doing it, then clearly we need to be more anxious about it. So it's unbelievably infectious from a psychological point of view, not only from a physical point of view, but it's so, as we've been saying, it's so important just to try and keep perspective on things. Because really, and I'm saying this to adults out there as well, the chances of getting coronavirus in South Africa are ridiculous, ridiculously small.
Right.
And even if one contracts coronavirus, you know, and I think Zanatti mentioned that, we don't focus on the people that recover. The huge majority of people recover from coronavirus. And I think that's also important to keep in perspective.
In fact, in so many people, there's also people who barely get ill at all that are testing positive to the illness. And I think that's also important.
Interesting enough, there was a whole, I read an article about how the infection rate amongst children is so small. And they're trying to work out why. And I think, you know, what they're saying at the moment is that children are getting the coronavirus in a milder form, and it's seen as flu, it's seen as like, you know,
well, that's
something.
What I keep wondering, when are we going to reach a stage where we say, okay, it's now global, relax, everybody, you know, whoever gets it, you know, it's like getting the flu and we'll get better from it.
Yeah.
We can't contain it.
Yeah, well, I think we need to contain ourselves first. I think that's the most important thing is, whether you're talking to your children or you talking to yourself.
Well, I think it starts with ourselves,
correct.
Doesn't it?
Important, get the information, get the right information, and put that information in perspective. I think that's the first step. Because if one does, then I think one's anxiety levels will definitely already should go lower.
So, and assuming we haven't had the conversation with our children, should we be having it? Are they picking this up anyway? Or if they haven't raised it, should we not raise it? Well, what's your advice on that?
I think it depends on two things. I think firstly, the age of your child, and knowing your child.
So give us a ballpark, and obviously it's child dependent.
You're right. Absolutely. So let's just first say that if your child is very anxious, and has a predisposition to anxiety, and they're not
worrying about Skylab falling on their heads.
Correct. It's probably not a good idea to bring it up with them if they haven't brought it up with you. You know,
really? I would think the opposite, because I would think that, and maybe I'm using my own experience incorrectly, but surely a child that's anxious is hypervigilant and will have picked up on it anyway, but just might not be saying it.
Well, I think often children who are anxious do verbalize it. You know, say, geez, I've heard about this at school, mom or dad.
Right.
But to go and say, have you heard about the coronavirus? Might be opening up a can of worms that you don't want to open.
I hear that.
So, yeah. So I think for me, but if you're
just, I'm the worst parent in the world. I'm just honestly the worst parent.
Going to one of his kids, have you heard about coronavirus?
I know, definitely do that. Yeah. But they calm me down. So it's fine.
But if children are talking about it, just listen. I think that's important. Or bringing it up in conversation, then absolutely sit down with them. And have a discussion with them. And I think the first thing to do is to listen. Try and understand what they know, in inverted commas, what they understand about it. Because often there are so many misperceptions and misconceptions that children have because they are learning about the virus from other 10-year-olds or other 8-year-olds. So very important to listen to what they say. If you don't know the answer, say, listen, I'll get back to you. You don't have to have all the answers, at your fingertips.
So you shouldn't say, of course, I don't know the answer, but nobody does. That's why it's so serious.
That's right.
Yeah, we shouldn't say that. That's probably why we're all going to die.
Correct.
Right. Okay. No, I'm starting to understand the different sort of approach that maybe perhaps I could take on this.
Yes, there is a different way. There's another way.
Right.
And certainly then, from your knowledge, from the information that you've gained, to speak to your children in a very calm way about it. And again, we're going back to the two P's, the proximity and the probability, and put that very much in perspective for them. So I think that's really the way to go about it. Listen to what they are saying and make sure that you have the facts. And then we talk about probability and proximity. And really that should calm most children down or help children to put it in perspective, to not feel like they are going to be infected and that this is a life-threatening situation for them in South Africa.
So then I would obviously also then advise parents and people not to read my article in this week's Jewish Report.
What did you
that's
say?
That's coming out. Well, this is my opening paragraph is, without intending to spread panic, I don't think it's unreasonable to imagine that if the coronavirus COVID-19 comes to South Africa, most of us would probably die. I'm not seeking to be alarmist, but there is really very little chance of us surviving this. So maybe don't let your kids read that article.
No, the Jewish Report should not be read.
No, it can be, just not my article.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
You sound like those people when they're about to make a speech, they're like, I won't be long. 2 hours later.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Those are the worst. Yes, anyway, it's more of a Jewish angle to coronavirus, because I kept thinking, like, what happens? In China, they told people they had to stay home. Right. And then one person can go shopping for food every 3 days.
Right.
You tell a woman in Glen Hazel that. You tell a mom in Glen Hazel to go shopping for food once every 3 days.
That will never happen.
And if you run out of Cheerios.
No, I got you.
You know, that's an emergency. So there you have it. David Abramson, that is a very, very, it's very important. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519. What about the approach, of actually just approaching it with humor? In other words, a style in all seriousness, that I deploy with this kind of a thing. Mm. Does that, in your experience, alleviate anxiety, or actually does it make it worse?
Well, depends on your customer. And I think you've got to know your child. I know my child, my little guy, he loves humor.
It would work for him.
It works for him when we say, good luck today, hope I'll see you later.
Okay, that's a bit intense.
No, and loves it. But you've got to know your customer.
Right, that's very funny. So, that's very cool.
Yeah, but so interesting enough, we do use humor.
Right.
But you need to know your child. And if your child is very, very anxious, planting that
don't
seed.
Don't say, I hope we'll see you later.
No. Planting that seed, again, it can grow very, very quickly with anxious thoughts. So I think know your child and know the best way to go about it. Also people would say, empower your child. To say to the child, but don't worry. If the coronavirus comes to South Africa, what we need to do is just wash our hands, cover our mouths, and some people would say that's a great way to go because it empowers children or empowers people.
Gives them some way of handling
it. But if you have a child who has a predisposition to anxiety, you're going to really be encouraging OCD, obsessive-compulsive
behavior.
So again, just be, I think, very careful. Know your child. and then evaluate the best way to go.
Time is 8:43, chatting with David Abramson. A very good morning. David Abramson joining us in a studio. It's an interesting concept because historically and biblically we would have looked at things in terms of reward and punishment. But actually we do need to grow from every experience. Mm. So whichever words we use doesn't really matter. Mm. The point is that we do need to elevate ourselves through anything, and everything that comes our way actually does present that opportunity.
It does. And, you know, the words that are often, you know, slung around really these days and maybe overused is grit and resilience. But it really is true that, you know, when one experiences adversity, one can absolutely learn from it. And it does sound like a cliche, but I've seen it so many times. And it's really a choice, you know, that one can feel overwhelmed by it, can feel that, you know, feel negative about it. The world's a very bad place. So I've had such bad experiences, overwhelming experiences. Or I've seen amazing, remarkable people who have taken negative experiences, absolutely overwhelming experiences, and used it in their lives to really make things so much more meaningful for them. So it is a choice. Is it very easy to do? Not at all. But I can tell you that absolutely we can use these you know, these incidents, these opportunities in our lives to really make a difference and to enrich our lives in many ways. But granted, I can hear people say, yeah, easier said than done. Mm. Of course it's easier said than done. But boy,
one of the most difficult things is to do that, is to take on something that's happened and say, right, you know, how do I use this?
How do I use this? Why did it happen? How can I learn? How can I enrich my life? How can I, you know, understand things from a richer perspective, a deeper perspective? And it's interesting because, you know, I often see people who've had life-changing experiences and nothing really changes in their lives, you know. But on the flip side, you know, there have been people who have literally changed their lives around and learnt from things which would be seen as a tragedy or a trauma. So it really is about deciding what you're going to do with it and seeing it as an opportunity. Maybe it's a bit rough to say, see it as a present, see it as a gift, but see it maybe as an opportunity you know, to do things differently.
All right. Dov says, I think the coronavirus teaches us that there are viruses in the world. I suspect we already knew that, Dov, but thank you for that. And Ansan says, again, you failed to read the SMS, Rebiblical Times. Just to tell you that this is the first SMS I'm seeing this morning from this number. So I do apologize. But that SMS, any other SMSs from that number, it ends with an 8, if that's your number. The person that sent me the message saying, again, you failed to read the SMS, Rebiblical Times. I did not get that. Ronnie says, I love it when Zanati says gefilte fish. Now I challenge Zanati to say for cramped.
What is that?
It means miserable.
So I'm for cramped.
Yes, exactly. Oh, there we go. There we go. Hold on, Zanati. Hold on. We're going to need you to say that. We need you to say that again. Say that again, Zanati.
I am for cramped.
Yes. In fact, the studio audience absolutely love it. Oh, my word. They are basically on their feet. It is 8:59. A very, very good morning to you. Hope you enjoyed the show just as much as we did. Hope you only take the parts that you meant to take seriously. All other parts do not take seriously. And obviously the last session with David, I would hope that that you did. David, thank you. Very, very interesting, very informative, and I think that very useful, because it certainly gave very nice examples and ways to put things into perspective, both in terms of possibility and probability. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. I hope you have a fantastic Thursday, and we'll see you then.